Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tierney, oh, le grand pont pour éliminer Furlong. Qu'est-ce qu'il lui a fait là? Qu'est-ce qu'il lui fait, Kieran Tierney? Kieran Tierney, c'est quoi? C'est quoi ça? Il vient souhaiter une très bonne année aux supporters d'Arsenal. Kieran Tierney, quel rush! Magnifique! Magnifique!
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, a very goodly interlull morning to you.
Goodly interlull morning to you too, Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm okay. It's been a beautiful weekend here in Dublin. We've had some great weather. Took the barbecue out for the first time. Cooked some meat, drank some beers. It was pretty pleasant, all things considered.
I've done a very British thing. Basically, the weather was good here last week. And so in response, over the weekend, I sort of put my winter wardrobe into hibernation. And I've been informed since that the weather forecast for this week is particularly appalling. Someone actually said to me it might snow, which would be certainly justification for my actions.
Yes.
But I don't know. Yeah. They might have been winding me up.
Well, I mean, it's a much less exciting thing you were doing this weekend than I thought you would be doing, you know, given your exploits of last week. I figured you would spend this weekend patrolling the toughest barrios and neighborhoods and estates
in
London.
The favelas of Rio.
Exactly. With your I am harder than Ross Kemp t-shirt on, shouting, come on then, if you think you're hard enough, etc., etc., tipping off the Daily Star paparazzi to be there at the same time. It sounds a bit more mundane, though.
It was, sadly, much more mundane. Since I returned to Marseille, things have come back to normality. I suppose I should just briefly summarise that for people who aren't aware. But yeah, while I was in Marseille, I paid a visit to a neighbourhood called La Castellane, which is where Zinedine Zidane grew up. It's an estate in the north of the city, or to the north of the city. It's on my Instagram stories if you go over there now. But basically, it was quite an unfriendly welcome. and then it transpired, after more research, that probably I shouldn't have gone there on foot alone. But, you know, I was trying to do the right thing for Arsenal. Something bad happens to me, something good happens to Arsenal.
Yeah, and I think we all appreciated that aspect of it, for sure.
You know, I really tried. I walked into one of Europe's most dangerous estates in a desperate attempt to secure top four qualification.
Well, look, I mean, it was funny. For us, anyway, looking at it from the outside, and obviously your comedic chops are well known, so it was very funny the way that you put it across on Instagram, which people can go over and have a look. But I mean, it must have been a bit bit hairy, no? It must have been a point where you were like, "Oh fuck."
Yeah, I think that the point when I walked onto the estate and first saw a man in a balaclava radioing people about my presence on the estate. I'll be honest, my spider senses started tingling at that point. You know, call me just very in tune with sort of, you know, bad signs. But at that moment, I thought, this is not entirely conventional. When I was surrounded by the guys on the little scooters, the little mopeds as well, and I thought, oh, there's literally no way out of here. Again, just, you know, a few senses just saying, maybe this wasn't a good idea. But I have to be honest, it wasn't as scary as it should have been. I mean, it should have been, by all rights, terrifying. But I was sort of so naive and so underprepared and so reliant on my A-level French and desperately trying to think of the right thing to say that the true peril of the situation never quite hit home.
Yeah.
I think crucially, I sort of was able to portray, heaven forbid I would ever be this, but portray a naive, ignorant tourist. And I summoned all my acting skills to produce that performance.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
think it got me out of some trouble.
Well done. You dug deep into the
I don't know how I got there, Andrew, you know. I mean, yeah, I was cruelly missed off the Oscars ceremony for that particular performance. But
well, yeah, maybe you'd have got a slap otherwise. Who knows?
Incredible. I mean, you know, impossible not to think of all the kind of Arsenal parallels, you know, Granit Xhaka at the PFA Awards marching up and slapping Gordon Taylor across the face or whoever it might be.
Oh, fun times.
It's a weird world we live in.
Oh, fucking right it is. But look, you were in Marseille not just to sort of attempt to get yourself killed inadvertently.
No, that was actually very much a sideline. That
yes.
secondary to the real reason I was there.
And you were there to watch William Saliba and also Matteo Guendouzi, but I'm not even remotely interested in Matteo Guendouzi.
Okay.
So we don't need to talk about him. But William Saliba, you wrote a very long and detailed piece on The Athletic, but just sort of...
As I tend to be.
Yeah. From your seat in the stand, whatever it is. I mean, how did you assess his overall performance in this game?
Up and down, to be honest. I mean, he was very lucky not to give away a penalty. I mentioned this last week, I think. And he was booked for a pretty rash challenge. He plays on the right of a back three.
Mm.
And when the ball goes... He spends a lot of time basically in the sort of right-back zone, or certainly did against Nice when I was watching him. And when the ball goes down the line, it goes in the channel. He's not... doesn't look the most comfortable, you know, chasing out there after a winger or an overlapping fullback. He looks very much like a centre-half playing at fullback. But it's interesting because it's a similar role to the one Ben White played for Brighton the year before he joined us. So in some respects, I guess would represent a good schooling, you know, for coming into Arteta's system. He does look very composed on the ball. He does look an astonishing physical specimen. I mean, he's, you know, he's the biggest guy on the pitch every time you see him play. Probably could be a bit more aerially dominant given his height and his power. But, you know, he's has that kind of... I hesitate to use the comparison, but that Van Dijk-y build, you know, the kind of dream centre-half. A bit like Gabriel, really, as well. But, yeah, he looks clearly very talented, clearly some flaws and errors to iron out. I guess what's impressive about him is that even when he makes the mistakes, he is very unflappable.
Mm.
Like, they don't seem to carry with him. He has the Walcottian ability to kind of shrug them off and go back to, you know, next time he gets the ball, he turns away from somebody and sprays it out to the wing. And you're like, okay, he's not fretting too much about that hairy moment. So no doubt in my mind, there's a talented player there. He made his debut for France at the weekend.
He did,
Only just 21 last week as well. The question of what happens to him and is an interesting one in itself. And I have to be honest, I went into the piece and into the writing of the piece thinking, I was sort of thinking about it as a kind of, I was going to be like, you know, Guendouzi is Arsenal's past, but Saliba could be Arsenal's future. You know, in your mind,
as a
writer, you're like, that's a lovely little sort of way of framing this. And
I
have to be honest, the more I found out and researched and spoke to people around the situation, the less confident I felt that he will indeed come back.
Do you think, I mean, I personally think it's a good move for him, this loan move.
Mm.
I you know, it's extremely rare for any football club to pay £28 million for an 18-year-old who has barely got into double figures in professional appearances. That's just not something that happens a lot.
Nope.
And you're talking about him as a 20, 21-year-old who is clearly very talented, but like most 20, 21-year-olds, even some of our best ever defenders, made mistakes and had to go through a learning process at that age, right? So it's a weird one because I can see the benefit of it from an Arsenal perspective and from the player's perspective. You know, we need him to go out and play on loan and develop and maybe make those mistakes somewhere else, because for all the clamor of, like, we've got to get this guy in our team, if he makes a few mistakes, we know it doesn't take too much for the temperature to change, you know, when it comes to player opinion and things like that. So, you know, I certainly felt more confident about this decision to loan him out in terms of his future. Now, whether it works out that he comes back and is more a rounded player, or he's gone out and done one of those loan deals where it's actually worked out from the perspective that, you know, the way people talk about protecting the value of the player and the transfer value of the player and all that. So he's gone to Marseille. He's played very well there. He's become a French international, made his debut for his country, having a good season. And, like, if he doesn't come back, then he could command a pretty decent fee. So one way or the other, it looks like it's going to be a good loan deal for all concerned, player, club, and everything else. But the question about what is the plan, what happens, is he going to want to come and, if you like, play second fiddle? I think you made the point in your piece that maybe he wouldn't want to do that. He wants to play regularly, as most players do. But we have the other side of that is a club that needs more depth in its squad next season and competition for places, et cetera, et cetera. So it is going to be very interesting to see how it all turns out.
Yeah, I think I agree with you that the loan has worked out pretty well. I mean, when you think about how few Arsenal games there are to go round this season, partly down to our lack of progress in the FA Cup, but obviously our absence from European competition, I think Rob Holding has played something like 4 or 5 league games from the start. And I think Arsenal benefited from the consistency of having White and Gabriel playing week on week. I think if you substitute Galiba? Who's Galiba?
You've mashed him up with Matteo Guendouzi, this guy.
Yeah. If you substitute Saliba in for Rob Holding, I'm not sure that sort of level of exposure to football, it would have been the best for his development.
Mm.
I think the year he's had at Marseille has been really excellent. He's played more minutes than any other player for Marseille. I think he's got the France call-up. Probably, if he were to move this summer, Arsenal would stand a significantly better chance of recouping, you know, close to what they paid for Saliba than they would have done 12 months ago. So, yeah, I think in one sense, everybody wins. The impression that I had coming away from it is that the France call-up does potentially change things a bit, in that it indicates to Saliba that he is at least close to a place in the World Cup squad. Mm. He's by no means a shoo-in. It's really competitive, and a couple of players were out this international break.
It was Pavard that he replaced, you know, who's...
Yeah, yeah. And I think, obviously, Kurt Zouma's dropped out of contention for a few reasons, and I think Konate didn't get selected at Liverpool, so, you know, he's another contender. They've got loads of centre-halves, basically.
Mm.
But I think that his feeling will be, if I have a shot at that, I have to go for it. I mean, look at Italy. You know, the opportunity to play in a World Cup is something that only comes up several times, at best, in a player's career.
Well, and maybe not. we'll see what happens, yeah.
Well, exactly. And for all our sniping at international football, and I think much of it justified, I think for players it still holds a real appeal, particularly on that stage. And I think that he will be deeply concerned about the prospect of coming back and not playing games of the magnitude to convince Didier Deschamps to make him part of that squad. And I think that will weigh very heavily in the conversations that happen in May. And I found it interesting as well that as yet, there really have been no conversations. You know, there's been no sense of, well, at the end of the season, you'll come back and be part of the squad. I mean, the dialogue between club and player is, you know, it's not unusual for a lone player to be relatively left to their own devices, but I do suspect that if someone was integral to your plans and a big part of your future, I do wonder if there might be a few more clues about how they might be used next season passed on by this point.
I mean, how much of that is down to just Arsenal keeping as much stuff under wraps and as secretive as possible these days, you know, in terms of the inner workings? Because there was a report a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a couple of months ago, that Edu and Ben Napper, who is the loan manager at the club, were over there to watch him. So there's some...
That was in October.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did go. They went and they watched him play PSG. It was 0-0. Saliba played well.
Oh, was that the tackle game?
Tackle on Mbappe, yeah. And Edu stayed after the game. They had a sort of quick chat to congratulate him on his performance. Mm. But that was in October, and there's not really been substantial contact between senior figures at the club and Saliba since then. Yeah, you could say, well, they're just letting him get on with his season. And that would be a valid argument. I have to wonder if this player was really important to your plans, if there would be a bit more than that. Maybe that's unfair of me, but that's my impression. I kind of feel... and like I say, I did not go into writing this piece thinking that this would be my conclusion. Mm. But I kind of feel like on both sides, there may be a slight sense of it not necessarily working out.
Well, I mean, it's at a point in the summer where a decision has to be made one way or the other. They either say, this is a player that we want to be part of our future, and let's work around it from that perspective, or... He's got 2 years left on his contract. We think now is a time where if we're not going to build or not build around him, but really integrate him, we should probably sell him while his stock is high, while he's got 2 years left on his contract. Avoid the old, well, now he's got 1 year, he can just wait it out. You know, as much as players don't want to just sit around and everything else, but it does feel like this is the pivotal moment this summer, isn't it? Where that decision has to be pretty much final, if you like.
Yeah, and like I say, I think the international call-up is potentially a catalyst in that situation, because I think prior to that, maybe the prospect of coming back and giving it a go, fighting for a place, maybe you don't get in the first half of the season, but by January, you know, maybe you're pushing for a place, you can break into that partnership. I just don't know if that's going to cut it anymore for Saliba. And I don't get the impression... Maybe I'll be proved wrong that the club will fight him on that. You know, I feel like if he says I need to play and I want to play and that's my priority and that's my project for the next six months, there's not much from where I'm stood coming out of the club that makes me feel like they'll dig their heels in, especially if they feel like they can get their money back. I mean, it's... You know, it's an interesting one, Saliba, isn't it? I mean, there's so much talk about him. I suspect it's the source of some frustration, probably internally at Arsenal. They're probably like, we're doing really well. We've got two centre halves who would play really well, and yet Saliba. The other side of that coin is when you pay, as you said, that much money for a young player who also clearly has talent, who's clearly a big prospect. Fans are going to talk about that and be interested in their
future. Of course, because when you pay that, there's a level of expectation. You kind of, look, I know it doesn't always work that way and it's not true 100%, but you sort of associate the transfer value with the ability of the player in a way. You know what I mean? Yeah. You pay £28 million for an 18-year-old centre-half, you're thinking, fucking hell, what's this? Who is this kid? He must be amazing. And, you know, that's I think, from the very start has informed a lot of the discourse, if you like, around William Saliba at Arsenal, which is, again, completely understandable.
Yeah, I think that's right. And also, you know, I don't want anyone to think that me saying this is what I think might happen or what my sense is to think that that's what I... want to happen. I mean, to me, it's eminently sensible for Arsenal to incorporate Saliba in their squad. Yeah. I would love to see what he could do in an Arsenal shirt. And I do think he would be open to that as well. It's not like the bridges are completely burnt and he's got no interest in coming back at all. I think he would like to kind of put it right, as it were. I just don't get that impression that that's where this is headed. And if you ask me to kind of predict it at this point, I would say Saliba will have a good career. And that actually, that money, although it was a lot of money at the time for a player of that inexperience, you know, I think he'll be a player who's worth that. I arguably he's worth that now, given his potential. I'm just not necessarily sure that's going to be at Arsenal. And it's I think as well, a big part of it is just, does a manager fancy a player? And I'm not convinced that this manager, maybe there's a better word, but like I'm not convinced he's really having Saliba. Like, I'm just not sure he's to his taste.
I can see that, absolutely. I also just wonder if maybe it's one of those where he knew he could sort of keep it on the long finger, if you like. A situation.
What does that mean, Andrew? I've never heard that.
Keep it on the long finger, just like down the line. Something that you could deal with at a later date. Yeah. So, you know, when he was looking at what he had to do at Arsenal, you know, the development of a 19-year-old, then 19-year-old central defender is obviously part of what he has to take into consideration. And he spoke about it and he talked about how he is a player for the future and we have to protect the player. And I think when he talked about that, when he said, I have to protect the player, I think he meant we can't just throw him in here. Because if you just throw a 19-year-old into the Premier League, into an Arsenal team that, you know, let's face it, wasn't as rounded as the one we're seeing right now, that had some issues that he was trying to fix defensively and, you know, gallantly trying to do it with people like David Luiz, etc., etc. But I think he just immediately said, okay, in terms of my priorities coming to the club, this is kind of down there a bit. So we can loan him and maybe he'll go another season on loan and what have you. And then we can properly assess. Like, I'm with you in that I would love to see him come back. I think we do need more depth at central defence, particularly if we get European football next season. And here's a guy, if you can say it, is pretty much ready-made to come in and do that. You know, we've talked about his physical attributes. We've talked about his development as a footballer. You know, there's clearly talent there. And he's our player. So it's sort of an uncomplicated way of doing it, but at the same time, pretty much everything that has surrounded William Saliba and the deal and his time at Arsenal feels also exceptionally complicated too, doesn't it? Like, it shouldn't be, but it is. And I think it all comes back to, you know, the price tag and everything else. So,
yeah, there's a lot of water under the bridge as well. You know, a lot went on, and particularly in that first summer where he came back, I think, you know, obviously he was very burnt by that experience. He really thought he was going to be included in the squad. Ultimately wasn't even registered, I believe I'm right in saying.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't do that well. I mean, as a club, they did not handle that aspect of it very well. And I think that's another reason why there's this sort of uncertainty that even if that period of, and I know it was a weird period because it was pandemic and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, if you're going to loan him, loan him. And I know something fell through at the last minute with a French club. Was it back to Saint-Etienne?
From what I was told, I mean, obviously it did fall through at the last minute, but the point was made to me, deals fall through at the last minute because they're left to the last minute, you know, and it had a decision on his future been made earlier, maybe that loan would have been sorted. The whole thing also is interesting because the people who did the deal for Arsenal, which was principally Hasfami and Raul Sanyei, Saliba and his representatives, I think, you know, worked with quite closely on that, aren't even there anymore. So I think there's kind of a slight distance, really, between the parties. And yeah, I'm just not sure I see it being bridged. And I'll be disappointed if that's the outcome. But have to hope that there's an alternative. I mean, also, we wait and see. You never know in football, I guess.
So what else has been going on in the interlude? Some Arsenal players have been scoring goals. Martin Odegaard scored a great goal. the other night.
Yeah, it was a brilliant goal. The sort of thing you want to see from him, really. Emphatic finishing, you know, in those areas. Mm. I think that's a good sign. Gabriel Martinelli made his debut for Brazil.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
A big moment for him, yeah. I know he's been really focused on that. I guess, you know, World Cup year.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be a theme for a lot of players, pushing for those places. England, Ben White played. Obviously, Saka got his COVID diagnosis.
Yeah, that's not great. Hopefully, he's feeling better and not in any way impacted by it. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, and Smith Rowe has been ill as well, right? But he...
he was left out of the game the other night because he had an injury issue, and it was like
a small injury.
Nothing too serious. Said
no, in contention for the next friendly. Yeah, apparently,
I worry a bit about that. I have to say, just from
his involvement.
Yeah, I think I wrote about it over the weekend. Where if you look at the amount of minutes he played in the Premier League until mid-December, it was 90, 90, 28, 61, 88, 90, 90, 90, 90, 86, 90, 90, 70. And then since he's had those little injury niggles and he had, a COVID issue as well, his minutes are 24, 12, 8, 19, 77, 22, 75, 12, 23, 90. Some substitute appearances in there. So I have a sense, I could be completely wrong, but I just worry a little bit that since coming into the team on December 26th, he's been pretty much ever present, and he went almost overnight from being young, developing prospect to first team regular. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if there are maybe some physical issues that he is dealing with as he's, whether it's the workload, whether it's physical maturity playing a part as well, as he's still growing. He's only 20, 21 as well, so he's beginning to develop physically. Those things combined with a lot of football over the last 12, 15 months, I just worry a little bit about things like that. So I don't want to see him play. Apologies to any England fans out there who would like to see him play, but I would rather not see him play for England. If there's any risk that he might do himself some damage for us, you know, because with 10 games to go, every injury is like they can be critical, can't they?
Yeah, it doesn't take too much for them to be season ending at this point. And I think I do get the impression that he may be being kind of managed at the moment, Smith Rowe. It feels like that in terms of how few minutes he's playing and, you know, he's been in and out. It feels like he's kind of close to the line, potentially. And he's a player with a history that makes you worried about that. But, I guess hopefully the Arsenal medical team and the England medical team are liaising on that. To be honest, I don't see him starting the game. I think if he has any involvement, it'll probably be as a substitute, and I could probably live with that. Mm. But, you know, it's... it's one to keep an eye on for sure. Ben White played. He played centre half in the first half and then played right back, I think, for the last half hour or
okay.
so. And did quite well as a right back, I think. Centre half, slightly less so. But I'm just trying to think beyond that. I've seen bits and pieces of, you know, players popping up. Pepe scored against France.
Did you see that? Yeah. Saw that. A goal at the near post. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Hugo Lloris. We'll have one of those in the upcoming derby, whenever that is. Nobody knows at this point.
Remember that one, Pepe. Yeah. We'll see that again. In the England-Switzerland game, Granit Xhaka didn't do his duty and deal with Harry Kane, unfortunately.
Just a crushing disappointment, unfortunately.
I know. The one time you do want him to just really...
It would be...
take the handbrake off.
It would be amazing, wouldn't it, if Xhaka... You know.
Spurs fans were worried about it. I saw a few tweets from anxious Spurs fans being like, they shouldn't even let him on the pitch with that animal.
Mr. Innocent Harry Kane, who backs into players trying to cause
slaughter,
spinal injuries. And didn't he nearly take someone's knee off earlier this season, Harry Kane?
Probably. That sounds about right.
I think he only got a yellow card and an MBE.
But no, I mean, I guess the other big news was Italy obviously going out of the World Cup.
Boycotting the World Cup in Qatar.
Yeah, honourable stuff from Mancini and co. They're a hard team to get a handle on, aren't they? They won the Euros a minute ago.
And then they were beaten. Who was it? North Macedonia?
North Macedonia.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, football, eh?
I know. Incredible. It's a great goal as well from Macedonia.
Yeah, yeah.
And other than that, yeah, bits of qualification sort of dripping through here and there. Shout out to our Canadian listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Canada have made it
to
the World Cup.
I noticed a couple of messages and an email this morning from Canadian gooners who are very, very pleased about making the World Cup.
Yeah, Jonathan David has led them to the World Cup.
All right. Is he on our, shit list?
He's on our shit list, actually.
He's on our shit list. Well, he might also be on the short list, but for now he's on the shit list until he gets himself off.
Exactly.
Laurent Koscielny?
Laurent Koscielny retired.
Retired from football?
I had a question about that, actually.
Did you? Do you want to do it? We might as well do it.
Yeah, why not? If I can find it.
What else have you got to do?
I've said, you know, I've got a question about that. Okay, here we go. Joachim, or Joachim probably, actually. Joachim Carlson would be a weird fusion of kind of cultures. Joachim Carlson says, about Koz, I agree he left in the club in a weird way, but I think reactions from some fans were unproportional. I.e. the video with the shirt, some fans react like religious fanatics gnashing their teeth. Was it that bad? If he behaves bad, shouldn't we behave better?
There's an existential question right at the end there. I thought it was going to be a bit more Koscielny specific rather than... look, there's always going to be pushback when you do something like that shirt video. You know, I think it was...
Can I say, I don't think it was that bad.
I don't think it was that bad. Like, I mean, on my give-a-shit-ometer, it's pretty low down, to be perfectly honest. Like there's...
Wasn't it just sort of like, I did play for this team, and now, et voila, I play for this team?
I think that was the intention, yeah. I think it probably could have been handled better. I mean...
He didn't piss on the shirt.
That's the way I'm remembering it, though. He just had a gigantic piss on the shirt.
And he takes it off.
Did a shit on the cannon.
And then he shits on the crest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, look... I think there are always going to be some people who view that as disrespectful. Like you, I didn't really think it was that bad. And I thought the way that he left the club to me remains there's a mystery in my mind about that because, you know, this is a guy who had been so professional, captain of the club, was here for 9 years. I know he had some issues with how much he was being played by Unai Emery, and people could blame Unai Emery if they like. But, you know, I have to say, in that regard, I have some sympathy for Unai Emery because, you know, who else have you got to try and hold your defense together? Mustafi, you know, there are good reasons why Emery played him. I just think the way it all went down, there's something about this we don't know. We don't know that, like... Here's a guy who's given his all for 360-odd appearances for Arsenal, stuck his head where boots were flying week in, week out, and then he announces he's not going on the tour to America that summer. And I think probably something went down between himself and the football executive level people rather than Unai Emery, you know? And that's what sparked this, because it was very much... out of the blue as well, wasn't it? Because it was all of a sudden there was an announcement. Laurent Koscielny's not going on the tour. He's been stripped of the captaincy and, you know, we'll deal with this in due course. So there's just something off about that for me.
Well, I'll never claim to know everything. And like you say, this feels like one where there could be a missing component. Certainly it is true that he was really... vexed, shall we say, by the way in which he was used, given his injury problems. I think, like, there are some crazy stats about how many games he played in how many days after returning from certain layoffs. But I also think he was on a promise, essentially, that he could go in the summer, possibly for nothing. And I think that promise was maybe something that was arranged with the previous executive team. I think Gazidis maybe was still at the club at that time. Mm. And then when it rolled around, it was like, well, no, we want to keep you. Or if you're going to go, there's going to be a chunky fee. And I think he did what a lot of players do in those circumstances, which is sort of he threw his toys out of the pram to get his move. And the thing is, people's attitude to that will vary, I imagine. You know, it doesn't, for me, it didn't undo everything good that he did for the club. And he wanted to go back to France. You know, there was a Rennes agreement. He did everything he had to do to make that move happen. You know, players do it to join us all the time. And it's part of football, unfortunately. I do think the video thing was a bit overblown. I don't think it was meant as an insult to Arsenal. I appreciate it came off that way a little bit. But yeah, I don't have any really negative feeling towards Koscielny. I thought he was an outstanding servant in his time and arguably one of the better players, I think, of the kind of Emirates Stadium era.
Yeah. We certainly got value for money from him and scored a very, very important goal in the 2014 FA Cup final. The most Koscielny of goals that you could score, like hugely important. He did score some clutch goals for us, some last minute winners and things like that, but basically injuring himself in the process as well, where he can't even celebrate the goal. You're just sort of lying in a heap as everyone else is celebrating around you. But yeah, I always liked him as a player, and I think the partnership with himself and Mertesacker was very good for a few seasons as well. And it's nice now to have something that feels like it could develop in the same way, doesn't it?
Yeah, and he's had quite a torrid time of late at Bordeaux, actually. Mm. I mean, I think he was left out of their 25-man squad and the ultras were embroiled in a row with him. He was accused of racism, I think subsequently cleared by an investigation. But yeah, it's not quite panned out, that move, as hoped. He didn't make it to the end of that three-year contract. But a great player for us in his time, certainly. Yeah.
All right. Well, look, we'll take a break because we do have some questions. And of course, as we mentioned last week, we are going to have to do the Predictatron.
Ooh.
Because we've 10 games left. So
okay,
we're going to have to go for it and see just how wrong we can possibly be. But if evidence of the past has told us anything, it is quite wrong indeed. The good thing is we tend to lose the evidence along the way. We can never find the Predictatron things when we're trying to look back.
Shall we combat that, Andrew? Are we making a rod for our own back?
I've set up a spreadsheet in Google Drive.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so there will be a permanent record.
It's 2022, guys. The future has arrived.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll do that and more in part two right after this.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArseBlog. Also on the ArseBlog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an ArseBlog member on Patreon. I did enjoy your tweet about Will Smith going up to give Chris Rock the football score. As if he'd just gone up and gone, like I said, 96 minutes.
Arsenal 2-1.
Arsenal 2-1.
That would have been nicer.
Would have been.
Yep.
Like you said, strange world. Do you want to like leave the Predictatron for a minute or two? Will we do a couple of questions and then ease our way into the Predictatron?
Okay, whatever you prefer.
Yeah.
Whatever you prefer.
This is the, you know, keep people listening, I think. This is how you do it, isn't okay. it? You put the good stuff towards the end.
Strategy.
Yeah.
Strategy.
But here's a question which I thought was quite good, and we have talked about a couple of these. Lawrence Tate, who's at @LawrenceTate_ on Twitter, he says, how many of the players out on loan do you see playing in an Arsenal shirt again? He said, I imagine only Balogun and maybe Saliba. So I'll list the players who are out on loan, and you tell me if it's a yay or a nay in terms of them playing for Arsenal again. Alex Runarsson.
Okay. Nay.
Sure.
Do you agree?
Yes. Hector Bellerin.
Nay.
I would go with nay as well. He seems to be having a nice time in Betis. Yeah. William Saliba.
Well, I've got to say nay after my part one.
Yeah.
But I see why the questioner says he's got a chance. Of course, he's got a chance. But I'd edge towards nay right now.
Do we include friendlies, preseason friendlies, in this? Or?
No, I think it's got to be a competitive game.
Oh, I'm a bit stuck on this one, but I'll go yay just for the sake of keeping people's hopes alive.
Okay.
Yeah, why not? Pablo Marie.
I hope you take that spirit into the Predictatron as well.
Pablo Marie.
Pablo Marie. So weirdly, this is one that I think could happen. Yeah, I'm going to say yay. I mean, yay isn't what I'll be saying, but I'm going to say yay. I think just a vibe. He's been very nice about Mikel Arteta during his loan spell.
He has.
Don't think he's burnt any bridges there. And I can just foresee a scenario where...
Hang on. Sorry, could you just start that again? Just say I could foresee a scenario.
I can just foresee a scenario where he comes back, there's an injury crisis, he gets kept around, maybe plays once or twice, goes out at the very end of the window. Of all these names... I think maybe he's the one that I would say yay. So I'm going to say yay for him. What about you?
Right. I think I'm probably going to say nay.
Yeah.
I think I'll go with a nay on him. I don't know how he's doing in Italy.
Sent off the other day, I believe.
Sent off, yeah, red card. What was he sent off for? Was it just like a professional foul or was... You know, did he go Will Smith on some guy?
Someone made a joke about his wife, yeah. And he really didn't take kindly to it.
No.
Not sure how he's doing either. Not sure.
Right.
I think that tells you a lot, that we're not really paying much attention.
I'm going to go with a nay.
I think a nay is likelier, but as you say... Keep some people's hopes alive. The Pablo Marie fans, I've got to throw them a bone.
It says, I'm looking at Transfermarkt and it says, serious foul.
Okay.
That's the thing, serious foul. So I wonder, does that mean serious foul play? Or did he just have a stern look on his face when he chopped a guy down? I don't know.
He's quite smiley a lot of the time, isn't he?
Yeah.
Sees red for what? Hang on, I'm reading a piece now.
A high foul. It's been called a high foul. Is he stoned off his bracket while also being serious?
I think he went in sort of over somebody's knee. I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe I'll see if I can find
it. I mean, there's some great translations here. Former referee Morelli, don't even know who that is. Said of the red card, I don't like it very much. He was not sent off for a denial of a goal scoring opportunity. A teammate immediately takes the ball. He was expelled for disproportionate vigour.
Disproportionate vigour.
There are elements in favour of red, which is why the VAR did not intervene. But for me, there is a lack of speed. Marie enters badly, but I see no elements for a serious foul. I would have given yellow.
Okay.
I think that's cleared that up. We know exactly what happened.
Well, I don't want to dwell on that then, if that's all right. so I'm going to go, I'm definitely going to go with a nay on that one.
You're going to go with a nay, okay.
Mavropanos. Konstantinos Mavropanos.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he can come back. I think his agreement's basically done. I think it's signed and sealed.
Lucas Torreira, who lost a tooth, I believe, in recent weeks.
Did, took a leaf out of my book, actually. Nay.
What, did he go to La Castellan and just not back down?
Yeah, it went slightly worse well for him.
Yeah.
His French isn't as good as mine. And he paid the price. No, I don't think he'll be back. He seems to be having a nice time in Italy. With a load of Italian clubs. When is he not?
He just likes it there. He feels happy and at home there, so why not?
Yeah, good luck to him. I don't think he'll be back.
Ainsley Maitland-Niles.
You never know with Ainsley.
It's just impossible. Impossible to say one way or the other.
I don't know if you wrote about him, didn't you, this morning? Is that right?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. It's not been going great for him in Rome, at Roma with Jose Mourinho.
He's sort of a backup right back, as far as we can tell.
Mm.
Not really playing. I mean, I'm going to say nay. I'm going to say that he finally gets his permanent move this summer. He has to, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he does, because he's got a year left on his contract as well. And yeah, the only thing is with Maitland-Niles, he could have his overcoat on, his bags packed. He'd be halfway out the door and somehow he comes back and plays. So you just never quite know with him. But I would say probably this summer he will be moved on. And I guess, you know, another Premier League club will snap him up.
I do sort of have the impression that he'll be like 34 and we'll be saying, he's really got to get that permanent move, Maitland-Niles. Is he a right back or is he a midfielder, though?
We already talked about Guendouzi, and that's an obligation anyway, so Marseille have to. Reece Nelson.
I mean, he's not set the world on fire, has he, in the Dutch league?
No.
I kind of feel like it could be a yay, just sort of out of, like, we might get him back and no one might take him. Not being sort of facetious or unkind, but, like, it's hard to see a queue forming for Reece Nelson right now.
True. I mean, he's stagnated quite a bit over the last couple of years. Like, the season before last, or the season before this one, when he didn't go out on loan, wouldn't or wanted to stay and fight for a place when I think he would have been better served going and playing more regularly somewhere else. I think his career would probably be in a different place right now. But I think there'll be somebody to take him. Contract till 2023. I think we did activate an extension or a year's extension, didn't we, before we sent him on loan. It's hard to see a way back for him at Arsenal. So I think he will go. I don't think he will play for us again.
I'm going to say yay. I don't think he's got a long-term future. I just wonder if he might be around a bit next season as like a squad player, partly because we might not be able to move him on. So I'll say yay for point of difference. And then last but not least, I guess it's Balogun, right?
Yeah, Flo Balogun. So I'm going
to... I think he will play for Arsenal again. Yeah,
I think so, yeah.
He got a goal for the England under 21s.
He did. Nice finish at the near post.
Not sure he's made his kind of commitment to who he wants to represent at senior level.
Because he can
mix.
He can go for the USA, can't he? He was born in New York.
I think he will. I don't know if it'll be next season. I'm not sure. It's hard to call, isn't it, our striker situation for next season?
Oof.
But, I think eventually he'll be back.
Well, speaking of our striker situation, on the Discord, Crumble says, what do you think Arteta and Edu are looking for in their new number nine? Whoever it is isn't really replacing anyone. Lacazette is a deep nine, almost a 10, and Aubameyang played a little wider. Do you think they want an Aubameyang with better link play or a Lacazette with more goals?
I would say definitely much more of a Lacazette with more goals based on what I have been told. I think, you know, and the clues are there in terms of the players that they've looked for, what they want. I mean, you know, the three names that were reported in January were Vlahovic, Calvert-Lewin and Isak. And I think they're quite instructive. They're all 6 foot plus. They're all guys who work quite hard, relatively hard off the ball, who can drop deep and link, some better than others. But also what Arteta is telling us in terms of penalty box threat, goal scoring. I mean, he couldn't be much more explicit about the need for someone who is more of a threat in the final 18 yards of the pitch. So I think they're really looking for someone who can kind of do both, you know, who can drop in and create those overloads, and is willing to work off the ball and press, but crucially has that ability to score goals. And listen, it's not easy to find someone who can tick all those boxes. We've certainly struggled to do it over the years, but that's what we need and what the top teams have. So yeah, maybe it's asking a lot, but I think that is what they're looking for, don't you?
Yeah, probably. I'm really curious about what depth we add as well, you know, because Balogun has gone on loan.
Yeah.
And he's doing okay, I think, at Middlesbrough, but maybe it's an indication that another loan might be better for his development than a few minutes at Arsenal, substitute appearances here and there, right? Mm-hmm. And Nketiah is going to go. I don't know what's going to happen with Lacazette. There's nothing new to report when it comes to the contract situation, even though Mikel Arteta gets asked about it every week. And he says, we'll talk about it at the end of the season, which is usually football talk for, we all know what's going to happen, but we're not going to talk or say publicly, yeah, we're going to let him go, or he wants to go, or whatever it might be. It's just, you know, the wrong thing to say publicly. So it does leave us with an issue of depth, you know? So you can't just buy one striker, or you have to have a plan to perhaps repurpose somebody else to play the same way, or maybe give you a bit of variety, or do you buy two strikers, or do you buy a winger and you can then move Smith Rowe to the false nine, whatever it might be. I'm curious as to what the plan for depth is. Obviously, like everyone else, I'm holding out for that, like, superstar, not superstar signing. Like, I don't think, as Stickers on the Discord said, is Agent Odegaard bringing Haaland to Arsenal? No, I don't believe he is, because the money is, even if he wanted to, the money is just incredible. It's insane. And his agent, of course, is one of those guys who make sure he and his clients get, you know, well paid for their talents. And Haaland is obviously an amazing player with the world at his feet and lots to choose from. But, you know, we're going to have to spend relatively big on one striker. Are we going to bring in another? I mean, do you think there's any way that you work out a deal with Lacazette? Is that even a good idea? You know, in as much as we can appreciate what he does, bringing people into play, et cetera, but like his goal scoring, which is the main job of a striker, which is what Mikel Arteta said he was looking for, you know, has kind of gone off a cliff.
Yeah. I think they'll make him an offer. I do think they will. Whether or not it's an offer he'd be inclined to take, I'm not so sure. And I don't think they'll offer him whatever he wants. Do you know what I mean? I don't think they'll be like, roll out the red carpet, you must stay, like I said, here's a 5-year contract. I think they'll make him a pragmatic offer. And if they can compromise on something like a 1+1, then I could see that happening. If not, I think you have to be thinking pretty seriously about a second striker, or at least someone who can fulfill that role, you know, or like you say, someone who frees someone else up. Because Smith Rowe, Martinelli, I'd be intrigued to see what both of those might look like kind of at the point of the attack. But I think you'd have to supplement the wide areas then with somebody. Certainly two attackers of some description, I think, will be on the list as things stand. But I wouldn't rule out Lacazette staying. I've always thought he'll go. I think the Aubameyang departure, which probably came about 18 months before people anticipated, might change things a bit there. And like I say, I think that there'll be an offer made. But whether or not he's amenable to it, I'm not so sure. I mean, especially if he knows someone else is coming in. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, you're probably going back to the bench.
Yeah. Yeah, like if you're his age and you want to play and you do want to play week in, week out, like, you know, if you know Arsenal.
Say,
like,
here's a three-year deal.
Yeah.
Come home, you know, you'll be the captain or whatever. You know, that will hold some sway. So, not sure. I think, that's a really close one to call, I think, right now.
Yeah. Can I ask you one more? I'm very sorry
because we
had a lot of questions about this. Let me see. I had one on Twitter from Jack, who's at Islington Jack, who said, Rashford, realistic recruitment or rubbish rumor? While on the Discord, Wolfbane4 said, morning, lads. What do you think of reports linking Rashford?
Got to be careful with this one because, so within football for kind of quite a long time now, maybe like Marcus Rashford, the symbol, and I guess the man has done some pretty amazing things socially, but I don't think his football has been great for quite some time. And certainly some people will tell you that there is a lot of PR activity around Marcus Rashford in a way that clouds or even detracts from his game. Now, some people hate that idea, and I completely understand why, because he's using his platform for amazing stuff. But if you're asking, and like I fully endorse and support all the incredible work he's done off the field. Mm. If you're asking me purely as a footballer, I'm not sure that he is the right guy for us. I just think his game is in a bit of a funk. Now, a move could enliven him. You know, it could be a kind of fresh start for him. But I also look at him and I think,
Danny Welbeck.
Positionally, I'm not sure what the fit is. Like, not sure where he would play. Don't know. What do you think?
Just a bit too Welbecky for me. And I love Danny Welbeck. I thought he was a great guy, but just not quite the player that we needed. It feels like as a player he needs a change of scenery, or he needs a manager who, you know, at Manchester United, who's going to come in and give him the sort of trust and faith that players, sometimes players need to get out of the kind of funk that you're talking about, you know? Because what's he got? 5 goals this season. I think he's had some injury problems as well.
The main problem he's had is they keep buying people.
Well, yeah.
To play in his positions. And that might say something, that affects the players' rhythm and confidence and all those things. I mean, look, he profile-wise, young English player, clearly a decent guy. He would fit the group. For me, it's more the thing of, like, is he a centre-forward? Is he a winger? I mean, very familiar with Danny Welbeck, I guess. I don't think he's a guy to play number 9 in this team. I think he could play maybe one of the wide roles. So maybe that's sort of, you know, when you're talking about that kind of secondary attacker, maybe that could be a fit. But yeah, I would hesitate. I just think the premium that would be on him because of his Englishness, because he's a United player, I'm not sure that he's worth it. I might be wrong.
Yeah, I don't really see us going for it anyway. I don't think he'd be too high up our list, unless there was some kind of bargain deal to be done and you're looking for that second forward, you know, somebody who can play across the front line, if you like.
Yeah.
You know?
And he can do that. He's versatile for sure. Yeah. I just sort of look at our young English forwards and I think I just prefer them, you know?
Mm.
But it wouldn't hurt to have another, I guess. But yeah, he's 24 still. He's not, you know, he's not, you know, he's still a young guy.
Yeah.
I just don't see it. It doesn't feel true to me. And I've heard nothing to suggest it is true. Mm. So, and as for the Haaland one, I am sort of staggered that anyone's talking about that as a realistic possibility, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's literally no chance of it happening. No chance.
I mean, zero chance, guys. Zero chance. He is going to, you know, what is it? Man City, Real Madrid, Barcelona, I think, are the clubs.
Yeah.
United, maybe. Yeah.
Why would you go to United? I don't, you know. You could go to Man City, the club of his father.
I mean, yeah, that seems nailed on.
Yeah. Plus, you know, they were looking. I mean, if you're Man City and you were going to pay a load of money for Harry Kane last year, you're not going to pay that money for him now.
Haaland's a way better deal.
Of course.
Way better.
Even if it's more expensive, you know, you've got years of a player to go. And Kane strikes me as one of those guys who at some point, you know, it'll just kind of grind to a halt like a fucking old steam train or something, you know?
Like Van Persie did a bit. I mean, did you see the stories today? United looking at Kane.
Good. Fucking perfect place for him.
I know, right? Very Sheringham.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably they'll pay an absolute fortune for him, and Spurs will use that money to buy 8 or 9 players, one of which might be good. So bring it on, I say.
Yeah. More questions, or are we trailing this prediction on further, or are we gonna?
Have you got a question? Do you have an interesting question that you'd like to? I mean, if not, we can.
Are they interesting? Are they interesting?
They're all interesting, James. It's just levels.
Lots about Chris Rock, actually. Now I have a look. we've done the Koscielny, we've done the Rashford. Oh, what about this one? Surge, Gunnar Surge on Twitter. Morning, gents. Rumours, possibly with little substance, that Real Madrid may be eyeing up Kieran Tierney. Is he an untouchable, or is there a high enough fee you would accept?
There's a few questions on that, actually, I noticed. Is there a fee high enough? Yes, of course. Of course there is. Do I think Real Madrid would pay that fee for Kieran Tierney? No, I don't think so. Like, I think, you know, you're looking for, and we talked about this last week, you're looking for reliability and consistency of performers if you're trying to build a team that's capable of achieving things and developing and growing. And I think he is one of those players now. Like, I know there's a bit of focus on his, you know, what he doesn't offer as much in the final third. But I think we made this point last week. Defensively, he's giving you like 7s every week, minimum. You know, giving you a 7 out of 10 defensive, 8 out of 10 defensive performance every week. And that's hard. That's hard to replicate. And I think there's sort of shades of Nacho Monreal in terms of how consistent he is, you know? So I would prefer to keep him. Obviously, if someone comes along and offers stupid money for any player, you think about it. But I don't think that will happen.
When you say there's a number, like, what do you think that number is? I mean, we paid 25 million.
Yeah. You know? You'd want to double your money, wouldn't you, to think about it? But then you've got to reinvest some of that money anyway. So it's not like you're making 25 million. You're going to then have to go and buy a left back, you know, assuming that you don't think Nuno Tavares is the guy to fit in straight away. Maybe he is, I don't know. But I think Tierney's a kind of a long-term player here. I think he's going to be here for a good number of years.
Yeah, I mean, I have heard there's some other clubs looking at him, like big clubs who have lots of money, which is a compliment, you know, and shouldn't be surprising. He's, I think, particularly at international level, he's really well regarded. I mean, Scotland have done well recently, yeah. And he's been pretty integral in that. I think he got a goal, didn't he, over the break?
Who are these big teams with money these days, though? I mean, beyond the obvious ones. Are they just the obvious ones?
Just the obvious ones, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not sure that... I don't know. I think... But he signed a contract. I mean, what is it? Less than a year ago.
Mm.
I think in the first half of the season, he wasn't the happiest when he was out of the team. And, you know, I think he found that difficult. But I think that's behind him at this point. He's really re-established himself. So... Yeah, I'm not sure I see it. I don't see him going. But I think there'll be more stories, I imagine, like, you know, about clubs looking at Tierney, because I do think he's really in demand, actually. Mm. I think he's rated almost higher outside of Arsenal than it feels like sometimes he is by our own fans.
Right.
I guess if that leads to, like, a crazy, crazy offer, then you have to think about it, but...
Okay, I don't think it'll happen. I think he's, you know, not part of the furniture. That sounds bad. He's being given the armband week in, week out. I think that says something. So
yeah, exactly. I think the captaincy thing could. I mean, that suggests that they see him as part of the long-term future.
Yeah. Okay, we better do it now. We better do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do the Predictatron. I'm just putting in the fixtures here into the spreadsheet so we can remember what we said.
So are we doing just Arsenal?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. Because I couldn't give a fuck about any of the others, you know, beyond I just want them all to lose all the time. So I think, yeah, we'll just do Arsenal, I reckon.
Right.
Do you want to start? We're going to play Crystal Palace on Monday away from home.
I'll say my thing, by the way, which is that I think if Arsenal can win their next three games, I think they will do it. I think they'll get fourth.
Right.
I think that's I'm not saying it's easy, but they're certainly easier than the three games after that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think... One thing that when you're sort of selecting win, lose, draw, is you don't think about like the kind of impact that results have on other teams. And I think if Arsenal take 9 from 9 in the next three games, I think it could break some of the other runners, you know? It'll just feel very, very strong position.
Yeah.
That said, am I going to predict that?
Crystal Palace away from home.
Yeah, I was going to say we're going to win.
You got to win?
Yeah.
I've got to win for there as well. I think it's going to be really tough, and I think Patrick Vieira is doing a fantastic job there, and they've got some very exciting young attacking players there, don't they?
Yeah.
So I think it could be a bit of a helter-skelter one, but I just think we'll have enough. There's a bit, you know, sufficient.
He's very exciting,
a bit of bad,
isn't he?
This team. Yeah. Yeah, he really is. I think we'll have a real test on our hands, but I think we will just have enough to win that one. Then we've got Brighton at home.
Got to be a win.
Got to be a win, doesn't it?
They are on the beach, as far as I can tell. Famous last words, but they've not been great of late. Yeah, got to be a home win.
Southampton away.
I'm going to say we're going to do it. I'm going to say it's going to be 9 from 9.
The thing about this particular run of fixtures is that we play on Monday, then Saturday again, and then we start to get into the realms of hectic midweek, three games in a week kind of stuff, which will have a physical impact. So I think we're looking at going into those three games, Palace, Brighton and Southampton, in inverted commas, optimal physical condition, if you like. And then we're going to have to think about how the fixtures congest and may have an impact on team selection and things like that.
What do you think, Southampton?
I think we're going to win.
Wow. So that would be a lot of wins in a row. I mean, if we do that, we've done really well. What is it next?
Chelsea away.
I'll say we'll lose that.
I mean...
Historically, this season, we lose to the teams above us. It's what we do.
I mean, I think if I have to predict a defeat at some point, that seems the obvious one. Because then we've got Manchester United at home.
Yeah. See, I think we'll win that.
I'm going to put a draw in there. I think we'll draw with Manchester United at home.
It's a short turnaround, Wednesday night to Saturday morning.
Yeah. And then we've got...
West Ham away.
West Ham
That's
away.
A tough run. That it really three is. Those games is tough. That's why the next three, I think, feel so important as well. West Ham away. Now, I believe I'm right in saying that they may... That fixture for them may fall between...
Let
some pretty
look.
Big European games. But maybe I'm wrong about that. Let's have a look.
Just having a look at
that. We play them on the 1st of May. It depends if they get past Lyon.
Yeah.
If they get past Lyon, I think that game is sandwiched by a Europa League semi-final, which would be great.
Yes, that would be good, all right.
But getting past Lyon won't be straightforward. So
no.
I think I'm going to go draw with the Hammers.
Okay. I think we will win against West Ham. I think we'll beat West Ham.
But I said we beat Man U, so yeah.
I mean, I could be getting carried away with things a little bit. But why
You've
gone
10
not?
Wins, yeah?
10, yeah, 10 wins. 15,
you've only got 9 15, games.
52 goals, something like that.
Okay, great.
Leeds.
Leeds at home, that has to be a win.
Has
I'm afraid,
to be a win,
Jesse.
Yeah.
Newcastle
away.
Draw.
See, this is one that could be impacted by
the table.
The ghost fixture. You know?
What do you mean, the ghost fixture?
The Spurs game.
Right.
That they haven't...
Oh, as in, like, it could be relative
to that. It could be between Leeds and Newcastle, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think there's a good chance it is going to be between Leeds and Newcastle. That's my inkling.
I mean, could they put it in the final week of the season? They could.
They could. That's been mooted. But my gut says it will be the week before. I wonder if they'll the TV companies will think, last week it could be irrelevant.
Mm.
They've made that mistake before.
Yeah, but then it's only a week before the last week. So at some point they're going to have to make the decision. But yeah, I think they might put it there. So too difficult away games. Nevertheless, I'm going to go for a win against Newcastle.
Okay.
Everton on the final day at home.
Win. Got to get it done.
Win.
And they are rubbish.
And then we've got the Spurs away.
Yeah. I'm sorry to say that I think I have that as a defeat. I think that's partly just, you know, protection. I need to, you know. But yeah, I think I'm worried about that game. I as funny as it was when we delayed it, postponed it, and as funny as it would be if we subsequently won it, they're really cross about that.
They seem to be bearing a grudge, all right, don't
they? Although their women's team postponed the North London Derby, I noticed this weekend. I was supposed to be at the Emirates Stadium.
Yeah.
I've just got a bad feeling about that one. My main hope is that it's sorted by then. But that feels a bit unrealistic. So I'll say that we'll lose. So how many points have we each given us then?
Right. Well, I've predicted 7 wins, 2 draws and a defeat. So that's 23 points for me. And you have predicted 6 wins.
Yeah.
2 draws and 2 defeats. So 20 points.
20 from 30 for me.
So that would leave us with, what points are we on at the moment?
54.
So I would get us to 77. Jesus, I could be on drugs.
You're feeling very optimistic.
I could be on drugs here.
I think you might be, but anyway.
But then you would be on 74.
74, yeah.
So that's only three less. So which one of us is the cockeyed optimist here?
Oh, I would have thought it would be me. I mean, the thing is, I did this earlier in the season.
Mm.
No, not like a few weeks ago. And I was like, conservatively, I think we'll get to 70 points. Like,
right.
I've been a little bit more optimistic on the record here. I mean, if we get to, as I've predicted, 74 points, I won't be complaining about our league position. Like, it would hurt to not get fourth, but if we get to 74 points, then I can live with the progress for sure. I mean, so just for the record, so 9 games Spurs have left. For them to get to the lower of our tallies, 74, would be 23 points from an available 27.
Well, then we just have to beat them and make it really difficult for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And bear in mind that I had us losing that game. Mm. So, I mean, if we beat Spurs, we're going to be in a really strong position. But it's so topsy-turvy. Their games on paper do look easy. I will say that.
Yeah.
Do you know what their games are? They've got Newcastle at home, Villa away, Brighton at home, Brentford away, Leicester at home,
Kidderminster,
Liverpool
Harriers.
Away. I'm holding out a lot of hope on Liverpool away, Burnley at home, Norwich away.
I mean, that's a very, very favourable run in for them. But I mean, does it not stink of Spurs as well?
Sure. I mean, listen, they could go to Aston Villa and get beat, or they could go to Brentford.
Emi Martinez masterclass.
Yeah. And I'll be cheering on those teams every single week. And if Liverpool don't do the decent thing and beat Tottenham Hotspur, I am going to be furious.
Incandescent with rage.
Yeah. It's really tight. It's really tight. Yeah. And the next three games are massive for Arsenal, because as well as we've done recently, there is a horrible little run coming up after that.
Yeah.
What I would say is, I think that when we predict these things, generally, all fans predict more wins for the good teams than actually happen. I think, as a rule.
Right.
Like, I think, basically, teams drop unexpected points. Yeah, you can rationally say, Arsenal will win that, Spurs will win that. It doesn't really go like that. For the most part, Liverpool.
Yeah, there'll be some twists and turns along the way for sure.
But
you know what? It's genuinely, I'm sitting here on a Monday morning talking to you about it, and I know that by the time the next game comes around, which is a week from now, for fuck's sake, but my stomach will be churning in a way that it hasn't for a few years, you know? That there's something exciting about this. There's something about the games meaning more, about the points being so important. And if this is part of the process to get back to where we want to get, we keep saying we want to get back to this particular position, don't we? Or to a sort of, what's the word I'm looking for here? To be the kind of team that can potentially challenge for the title. And that means every game is huge, and every game is massively important. And the consequence of that is that you can't just sort of drift through a season, if you like, which is kind of how we've viewed or how it's felt a bit in the last few years, where we know there's this sort of period of regeneration, if you like. And now we're getting to a point where this shit really matters. It really matters. And it's great, even if it's kind of terrifying at the same time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. You want stakes, you want consequences, you want drama.
Mm.
And I think, we don't need a predictron to to say we're going to have that. And it's great to be invested and feel relevant at this point in the season. Mm. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Really, really interesting. And I guess we just got to take a leaf from Mickey Arteta's book and try and take it a game at a time.
Yeah, one game at a time. All right. Well, look, there's the Predictotron. It is in spreadsheet form. It could come back to haunt us at the end of the season. Who knows? We could be shown to be know-nothing Egypts. But, you know, I'm sort of...
I imagine so.
Yeah, I guess so too. But look, I'm happy to get invested in the potential of what we can do in these games. And look, if it's disappointing, it'll be disappointing for obvious reasons and not just because our predictions are wrong.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think that's what we'll be lamenting.
No.
Our predictions were wrong.
God damn it. If only we could have predicted better, everyone would be happy. But yeah. All right. Well, look, will we leave it there for today? I think we should.
I think we should.
Quite interlully.
It's very interlally. We've actually done very well.
We have.
You could barely tell. But we'll be back.
We will.
After the Palace game, I presume.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll
do it the Tuesday, of course. All right. We'll do some stuff in midweek on Patreon for you guys as well. So stick around for that. For now, though, as ever, thank you very much. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.